Scott and Rick.
I didn't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you were speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there. I am Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds ahead of the Portuguese Grand Prix, which is happening this weekend, of course. Very exciting 2020 so far. We've discussed all the differences. We've discussed the fact that we're going to loads of new tracks and loads of different tracks, and all the drivers are getting confused and the circuits are new and we've got gravel back, and it's all been brilliant so far. This is the first ever Formula One race at Portimão in Portugal. There will be the 75th circuit to host an F1 race. Last Portuguese Grand Prix was back in 1996. Which was won by Jacques Villeneuve, apparently. New track, and the Portuguese Grand Prix is back. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, the track looks really good. It's they reckon it's a mixture of Spa and the Circuit of Americas, so very fast and smooth flowing. Brand new tarmac surface, so should be smooth like a billiard table, and lots of elevation changes. So it's going to be a really good track in terms of spectacle. I mean, they spent nearly £200 million on this track back in 2008, hoping they would get Formula One. They never got it. They got a test, an F1 test, in 2009. So the only drivers currently on the grid who've ever driven on this circuit is Lewis Hamilton in that 2009 test, and Lando Norris tested at this track in 2017 in an older Formula One car. So they're the only two drivers with any reference. The team, of course, have no data on this circuit whatsoever, and either do Pirelli, who are supplying the tyres. So it's going to be good, and I'm hoping we're going to get an exciting result in this one.
Yeah, and, you know, it goes back to what we said before with go-karting and stuff like that, isn't it? Like, the drivers, in theory, should pick this track up very quickly. They'll have a couple of goes around it. They'll start to learn the corners, and they'll get faster and faster and faster, and it'll be a very quick turnaround for the drivers. But I think that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Like you say, the teams don't have any data, and it's the teams that need the data and want the data, and they're never quite sure, you know, what do they do? Do they pit here? Is it a two-stop? Is it a one-stop? And all that kind of stuff. So that should make it a very exciting race. I think anything new just adds that extra element to it as well. And like, you know, we said before, this has just been great this year because we've had new, we've had unknown, we've had a lot of engines that are packing up randomly in the middle of the season. We've had engine people that are, you know, leaving F1 and announcing that mid-season. And it just feels like it's been a very exciting season. It's a shame that the Mercedes is so strong in terms, I mean, if you're a Mercedes fan, you're probably not thinking it's a shame, but in terms of the racing for us. But I think from Mercedes back, it's just been brilliant, hasn't it? You know, the shock of Ferrari being, I think they're sixth at the moment in the world championship. But the fact that, you know, the McLarens, the Renaults, you know, they're all up there. The Williams are much improved this year. It's just been very open, and we've had some good, exciting racing this year.
Yeah, you know what? I was quite disappointed. I saw the provisional calendar for 2021, next year's season, and it's back to virtual normality, apart from the fact that Bahrain's going to host the opening race and not Australia. That's going to come much later in the year next year. But apart from that, it's all the traditional tracks that we've been going to for many, many years, with the addition of Vietnam and Saudi Arabia, which will be an interesting race. But it kind of made me feel a bit disappointed that it's clear that they've got no plans to revisit these amazing circuits that we've had one-off at this year. And I just thought it might be nice if they threw a couple of those tracks in the mix. You know, the Tuscan Grand Prix, I thought, was a brilliant track, which really showed off the drivers at their best and at their worst because of those tight gravel runoff areas. Portimão, by the way, has gravel runoff areas. So again, if you make a mistake here, that's it. You are toast for the race. But yeah, so next year we're back to virtual normality, depending on what the COVID virus does around the world. But I was a bit disappointed to see that it hasn't been mixed up next year at all, really, where this year's been so well organised, so well run, with these amazing circuits, including Imola in a few weeks' time, which I can't wait to see them driving on that circuit again.
Yeah, and I think, you know, drivers at this level, it's a nice thing to add this unknown factor in, because, you know, there's always the ongoing debate of what is Formula One about. Is it about technology? Is it about, you know, advancement in technology? Is it about the drivers being the best in the world? Is it about entertainment? And it should be a bit of all those things, I think. But the entertainment factor is so important, you know, and we can't forget that this is there to entertain at the end of the day. And I think by adding these tracks in, it's just shown that, you know, it's a curveball for the drivers, for the teams, and it's great. It throws up all sorts of different things. We've had different winners this year, and it's something that they should add in. you know, I think we've mentioned it on the podcast before, if they did some sort of, you know, where they, I don't know, draw a ball out of a bag and go, right, so this year we're doing these three random Grand Prix, and they just throw some random ones in every now and again, or, you know, maybe say to the Grand Prix circuits, right, you know, tell us, you know, why we can come to your circuit, what's the entertainment value or whatever. It's all about money, isn't it? That's the thing. Who's got the most money? Who's prepared to pay the most money? And that's the way the world's going now, unfortunately, and Formula One's following suit. You know, whoever's got the deepest pockets can buy the next race is kind of how it feels, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I think the reason we're at these different circuits this year is a money thing, is that this year it's necessity to use these tracks so they can get a Formula One calendar together. And next year it's back to the promoters at the circuits with the deepest pockets, and that's really the reality of it. But, you know, it's quite sad that we're not expanding into different areas and different tracks and maybe some classic circuits that we haven't raced at for many, many years, because that's been the joy of this season. Despite Mercedes' dominance, the midfield, like you say, has been a lot tighter. Mercedes say they've stopped developing this year's car now, which means that Red Bull, if they're still developing, may have a chance to play catch-up towards the back end of the season. That would be nice to see. And they reckon that Red Bull are going to be strong at the Portimao circuit just because of the layout. And that would be really interesting. Alex Albon driving for his career this weekend, you would have to say. He needs to be close to Max Verstappen. Loads of rumours about who might replace him at Red Bull going round the paddock, aren't there?
Yeah, I was literally just reading some of these just now, actually. And Sergio Perez is rumoured. Nico Hülkenberg rumoured. There's lots of different options for both AlphaTauri and for Red Bull next year as well. I'm seeing rumours that Kevin Magnussen thinks that he's 99% sure that his F1 career will end this season, which, yeah, again, I think is quite sad. You know, I think Magnussen's, for me, is another one of those drivers that he's good. He's not had a chance to show how great he is. I don't think he's not, you know, he's never been in that sort of scenario where he can go, look, I'm really great. I can do this. And this is the thing. It's very brutal, isn't it? Formula One, you come in, and unless you are a Hamilton or a Verstappen and you get in a car and immediately perform and immediately your level, you know, top level, and you stay there season after season, unless you're at that level, you know, it just eats you up and spits you back out, doesn't it, Formula One? And I think a lot of these drivers are kind of clinging on now. Kevin Magnussen is one of them. Sergio Perez is another. Hülkenberg has already left the sport and has come back to cover this year and is, you know, rumoured that he might be coming back. But, you know, there's lots and lots of drivers that could be replaced for next year. And it's going to be interesting. Like you say, there's a lot of decisions to be made at Red Bull, driver, engine, all sorts of stuff, but they've kind of got to get it right, haven't they? Because I think if they get the engine one wrong and the car's not that great next year, I can see Verstappen exercising some sort of clause and off he goes. And if they get the drivers wrong as well, it could be really disastrous for Red Bull.
The Renault team, you know, making lots of inroads to becoming a top of the midfield battle towards the end of this season. Danny Ricciardo, I'm not sure whether he's regretting making the McLaren move now, because, of course, he made that decision before he'd even driven this year's Renault car. And now McLaren are saying, listen, we are getting the Mercedes engine next year, but we are not expecting to be on the podium at all in 2021. Whereas Renault, you know, with Alonso going back, could well be contenders next year. Ferrari, we've heard, are changing the rear end of their car completely for 2021 with the hopes to improving their performance. So next year could still be very exciting. And talking of Alonso, there's a documentary on Netflix at the moment called Fernando, as it might well be called. It's in Spanish, and I only watched one of the four episodes, but it was the episode which concerned his entry into the Indy 500 last year. Now, if you remember, he entered in 2017 and was doing really well until the last few laps when his engine gave way. And this year he was racing with a Chevrolet engine under the name, or last year I should say, Chevrolet engine under the name McLaren. Now, the first thing that struck me about watching this documentary is the incredible passion that Fernando Alonso has for everything he does, and also the preparation that he does. So, I mean, he's training, he's in the simulators as often as he can be. He's working with a personal trainer. He's getting his diet right. He's doing the publicity he needs to do without doing too much publicity. He controls very much all of the aspects of his motorsport life. And if you watch that, it's really interesting to see, because it was a total disaster, McLaren at IndyCar last year. It was just, you know, they turned up, the car wasn't working properly. They turned up without a steering wheel. They had to have a steering wheel made in the UK and flown over at the last minute just so he could get out in practice. Then they had a crash. They switched to the spare car. and just before the crucial qualifying, which he needed to complete because it was a chance he wasn't going to race in the 500 at all, they set the car up and mistook centimetres for millimetres, and the ride height of the car was 2 centimetres too low. I mean, you couldn't make it up. If you get a chance to watch it, watch it. It's really insightful. And, of course, he never qualified for the Indy 500 last year. The whole thing was a complete washout. So very interesting to watch. But him coming back into the Renault, I think, is going to be amazing. I think Renault are really committed to their Formula One program until at least 2025. So they've got Alonso next year, and then they've got him for the rule changes. And that's where you need experienced drivers who can make the change into almost a different formula, if you like, with the way the new cars are going to be designed. I think it's going to be fascinating. And it'll be interesting to see whether Danny Ric has made the right move by going to McLaren.
Yeah, just going back to what you were saying about Alonso training as well, it's very reminiscent, I think, of a movie star where they get paid, you know, these astronomical amounts of money, so they never have to worry about earning money or earning a salary because they've got all that money. And they literally dedicate their life, you know, because people joke and go, oh, Formula One drivers only drive, you know, 2 hours every Sunday. But, you know, they dedicate their entire life, like you said, to nutrition and to training. And they literally live, breathe and eat motorsport. And if they're not in the car, they're in the simulator. If they're not in the simulator, they're in the gym. If they're not in the gym, they're looking at their, you know, their data. If they're not looking at their data, they're looking at their diet. And, you know, these are proper athletes, proper sportsmen. And they, you know, they dedicate their lives to this. And it's just fascinating to see the effort that goes in, you know, because, you know, a lot of people think this success comes out of nowhere. You said last week on the podcast about Hamilton just staying late at the track and looking over his data and stuff. And, you know, this kind of success is not an accident. And you're right, you know, Danny Ric, I think Danny Ric and Lando, I've said it before, I think they're going to be an incredible team in terms of personality. Name me another team on the grid that's going to have the personality of those two drivers next year. It's like a marketeer's dream, isn't it? But I can't wait to have Alonso back. I've always rated Alonso. I think he's definitely one of the best all-round drivers in the world. I think he's had a lot of bad luck in his career. He's made a lot of wrong moves at wrong times. And I think, you know, him coming back just as Renault are kind of getting there and getting a bit of momentum. You know, they've got the money, they've got the power behind the team. And I think it's going to be a success story. I'm very excited about him coming back. It's interesting, the engine thing as well, because it's only really, it hadn't really sort of occurred to me how few engines there are on the grid. You've got the Renault, you've got the Mercedes, you know, Honda obviously are pulling out. And I hadn't realized how short we are of engine suppliers, really. It's sort of three options, isn't it? And that's it.
Yeah, so Red Bull are rumored to be thinking about taking over the Honda engine facility, which then they would therefore take the engine as it is and staff it with their own people and move it forward in that respect, which I think is probably quite a risky proposition. But I noticed that Christian Horner this week made a comment about Renault. He said, oh, well, Renault are a different beast now. You know, it's not the Renault that we had problems with only 2 years ago. And that made me think, oh, he's just he's sucking up to Renault now because he might need that option. And of course, according to the rules, the team that supplies the least number of Formula One teams is obliged to supply a team that needs an engine. And at the moment, that would indeed be Renault. So maybe Christian Horner is going to have to forgive and forget and get back into bed with Cyril.
Yeah, it's very awkward, isn't it? I think there was a question on Sky, I think it was, you know, about, you know, would you be prepared to kind of bury the hatchet? And he was kind of like, well, you have to ask Cyril. That's not really up to me. And you get the impression there's still a lot of hostility between Christian and Cyril. But yeah, like you say, you know, bite the bullet. And, you know, sometimes if you want success in a sport like this, you've just got to, you know, grin and make up. Grin and bear it and crack on and you know, get going with what you want to do. Like you say, if they take over the engine facility, that's a huge risk for them because, you know, they're basically then becoming an engine manufacturer in some sort of way. And they're not that at the moment. And you know, it's just interesting, isn't it, how that's all going to pan out in the future. But it's going to be fascinating how they go with the engine.
You were talking about these drivers being athletes. I stopped drinking wine for 2 days before my karting race last week.
And did it make you an athlete?
Well, not really, but I did qualify, so that was good.
You did very well, didn't you? So, where were you again? Remind me.
Well, I had to qualify. I had to qualify in the top five to get through to the national finals, and I qualified for the race in third place.
Nice.
And then spent the first half of the race literally with the guy in fourth place on my bumper continually for the first 10 laps, and then eventually got past me. So I finished in fourth, which means I still qualify for the national finals, which is great. But although they're they're in Nottingham, which is like COVID hotspot at the moment, so God knows when the final's happening.
And did you have an injury as well that you were mentioning? I thought at that point, oh, well, here we go. The racing driver excuses are coming out. I've got an injury.
Well, no, in qualifying, I overtook someone and thought I'd got past them, so sort of pulled back in, but I hadn't got past them, so I clipped their back end or their front end with my back end and went straight into the wall, and my hand got sort of caught in the steering wheel. Like we always see on the Formula One cars, they say, take your hands off the wheel.
Yeah.
I didn't really expect that in a 40-mile-an-hour go-kart, but it did. It gave me a bit of an elbow strain, but I managed, you know, I shrugged that off, Scott, shrugged it off.
Yeah, of course.
And raced to the checkered flag.
Yeah, as you would do, you know, you're one of these people, you just head down, visor down, off you go. No injury will stop you. Super Rick, the wheel.
Listen, before we get carried away with my own ego rubbing, let's go to get some facts from Nicky. He's bound to have some fascinating statistics on the Portuguese Grand Prix as a whole, because even though the last time it was raced was 1996, it was not at this circuit. Jacques Villeneuve was the last winner of the Portuguese Grand Prix. Let's find out some more facts from Nicky from At Lights Out.
As the Portuguese Grand Prix returns for the first time since 1996, Hamilton is in search of a record-breaking win, and Mercedes are looking for their first win in Portugal. Here are all of the stats and facts ahead of the 2020 Portuguese Grand Prix weekend. When F1 returns to Portugal this week, it'll be 8,799 days since the last race in the country. But that's not quite the longest gap between Portuguese Grand Prix. The longest gap was between the 1960 and 1984 events, which lasted 8,834 days, just 35 days longer than the gap between the 1996 and 2020 races. F1 returned to Portugal after a 24-year absence on the 21st of October 1984, and will return after another 24-year absence on the 25th of October 2020. With the Algarve International Circuit becoming the second brand new venue on this year's calendar after Mugello, 2020 becomes the first season in which two new circuits have appeared on the calendar since 2008, when F1 visited Valencia and Singapore for the first time. This is the 17th season where multiple new venues have joined the calendar, aside from the inaugural championship season 1959, 1967 and 1973 are the only years in which three new circuits made their debuts. From the 16 previous F1 races in Portugal, there have been 11 different winners. Alain Prost and Nigel Mansell share the record for most wins with 3 apiece, while Stirling Moss is the only other driver to have taken multiple victories at the event. Williams have taken more victories than any other team at the Portuguese Grand Prix, Renault engines have supplied the most wins, and British drivers have won more frequently than drivers from any other nation. While Renault engines have won 6 Portuguese Grand Prix, Mercedes power has never been victorious at the event, nor has Mercedes power ever taken pole in Portugal. Should the Mercedes Works team take pole this weekend, they'll continue their 100% pole rate in the 2020 season. This'll be only the second time that the team has taken pole at all of the first 12 races of the year, having also done so in 2015. Only Williams and Red Bull, who took pole at all of the first 15 races in 1993 and 2011 respectively, have a record longer than Mercedes. And finally, Sebastian Vettel has endured a difficult final year at Ferrari and has failed to reach Q3 at all of the last 7 races. Should he fail to do so again at the Portuguese Grand Prix, this will be the first time in his career that he's failed to qualify in the top 10 at 8 consecutive races.
Nice one, Nicky. You can follow his blog across the race weekend. He's at Lights Out on Twitter. The blog is amazing. So many stats and facts. Every weekend he posts some stuff and I'm like, really? And then I click on him and I read further details and it blows my mind every week. So you can check him out on Twitter and follow him. As I say, he's at Lights Out on Twitter. So the Portuguese Grand Prix this weekend. I know nothing about this track. I've never seen this track, never seen it in an action, never been on the PlayStation and played this track or anything like that. So I have no idea what to expect. So I'm quite excited about it because it's all the unknown for me, which is good. With regards to who's going to win, again, no idea because I've no idea. I've not seen anybody go around the track or anything like that. You can't rule out the Mercedes, though. And I think we will see Hamilton back on top because he's funny, isn't he, Hamilton? If he has a bit of a wobble, and I know obviously he won the last race, but when he has a little wobble, he just comes back stronger every time. And he just, you know, Bottas kind of tries to chip away, but just never gets anywhere with it, does he?
No, not really. I saw an interesting stat that Mercedes could win the Constructors' Championship this weekend if their competitors basically fail to finish. So mathematically, virtually impossible, but it could be done on paper. And another interesting thing is that they're expecting, all the people you speak to are expecting Red Bull to be very strong this weekend. Now, Alex Albon is 125-1 to win this race. Is it worth a tenner? He needs the driver's life. It might mean that he needs Mercedes to crash or have a DNF. And the same with his partner, Max Verstappen. But 125-1, it might be worth a little punt on that, because Red Bull, as I say, are expected to be strong. And then look at George Russell, who, I can't believe we're even talking about this, but George Russell could well be out of a drive in Williams next year. A rumour that I've heard is that they might sit him out, because he's a Mercedes development driver, might sit him out for a year and bring him back in to partner whoever is still the lead driver at Mercedes for 2021 when Bottas's contract runs out. That's an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, bizarre, because George Russell is one of the better drivers on the grid. I think he's in one of the worst cars, and he constantly outperforms his teammates, constantly outperforms that car. I feel sorry for him, because it must be tough for him to be at the back. And, you know, whenever he does anything outside of Formula One, you know, whether it be the online racing they do, he always does really well in it. And he's really well liked. And I think he's a great young talent. For me, if it was my choice, I would have put him in the Mercedes with Lewis for next year as well. I'd have swapped him and Bottas out. I'd have taken a punt on him. I think he's a new Charles Leclerc in my eyes. You know, he's this young upstart that just, you put him in that top car and away he goes, and off we see. But like you say, if we see Formula One next year without him, that'll be absolutely bizarre. And there's the Russian Formula Two driver, Nikita, is it Mazepin? Looks like Marzipan, Nikita. That's Marzipan. Right.
Yeah.
He's potentially signing a 2-year Haas deal as well. And like I said before, you know, we might be losing Sergio Perez. We could lose Hülkenberg again. You know, we could lose Albon out of the Red Bull. I've got a funny feeling there's going to be a lot more dramatic driver moves in the next couple of months than we were expecting. I thought it was going to be a very kind of, you know, everybody kind of where you are, just stay there, we'll do another year like this. But I've got a funny feeling it's going to be musical chairs soon.
Well, look, there's a few drivers to look out for this weekend, basically because their cars are improving, but also because they've driven this circuit before. Now, I mentioned earlier, only Lewis Hamilton and Lando Norris have driven this circuit in a Formula One car. However, Daniel Ricciardo, Valtteri Bottas, both drove here 2009 in British F3, Perez in GP2 that year, Charles Leclerc, George Russell, Alex Albon, Lance Stroll and Antonio Giovinazzi all drove here in the 2015 European F3. So they are the 8 drivers with pure racing experience at this circuit. Will that give them an advantage? And they're all drivers who are driving for two. Well, certainly Daniel Ricciardo at Renault. That's a team that could do well this weekend. Valtteri Bottas and Mercedes, obviously front runners anyway. So these guys, with the experience they have on this track, may make the difference. So hopefully we're going to have a really tighter battle in qualifying and during the race.
Yeah, I'm going to say Verstappen for the win, actually, you know, and Hamilton second. And I think I'll go with Lando Norris third.
Oh, it's a brave prediction, that. Brave. I'm not going to play it safe either. I'm going to go for, I think Danny Ric's going to get another podium. I'm going to go Hamilton, Danny Ric, Verstappen.
Interesting.
Yeah, it'll be wrong. It always is.
But we're very excited about it. It's going to be a unique race, at least. It's all different, so I'm excited. Anything that's different and new, I like. So Portuguese Grand Prix happening this weekend. We're very excited. We'll be back next week to kind of review the race.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.